Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. I am Dorian Wallace and my lovely sister, Raina.
Hello. I realize what makes me laugh at the beginning of every show. I just fucking figured it out. Because whenever the show starts, I hear the unmute go off. Because I know Autumn. See, even the universe says, bitch, please shut up. But I can't be stopped. What can I say? I'm just going to keep talking because that's what I'm good at. Anyway, hello, sis.
Hello. How are you?
I am all right. I have had a long day. It is going to be a long weekend of work. I am busier than a one-armed paper hanger. But I'm very excited about our guest tonight.
Yeah. Can't
wait to talk to him. Mr. David Salisbury is going to be joining us. Very prolific writer at such a tender age, but I'm very impressed. So I'm excited about the show. So anyway, yeah, so today was crazy. I had a lot of people not knowing which end was up, but I got it all squared away for the most part. How about you? I want to hear about your day.
Oh, it's been a hell of a day. It started off before I even finished my first fucking cup of coffee.
Oh, wait a minute.
Before you launch,
give your shout out first.
That's right. We actually have two tonight.
Two.
So I will
not
give
one,
first
but
shift.
Two. Yes, please. Give it.
Two. Okay. First shout out, as usual, to my cousin Jess up in New Jersey. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. I love you. Now, my second shout out is to a good friend to almost everybody in the universe.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I swear. It's like I run into people and it's like I hear the name Akbar. And it's like, you know Akbar? Too? How the hell do you know Akbar?
I know, everyone knows him. I've known him since I was a teenager. That's how far back I go with the legendary Akbar. But yes, give the shout out. Do it.
Yes. We at Desperate House Witches, Raina and I, would absolutely like to extend the most warmest congratulations to Mr. Akbar, who is getting married tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness.
Yay.
Ladies, watch out because he is officially off the market. I know a lot of ladies who are right now breathing a sigh of relief and saying thank you to the gods for that. And I'm not kidding. Let me tell you what. If you know Akbar, and we do, he has an eye for the ladies, or at least he did. Now he is off the market. So we can all... We can all attend medieval events in relative safety and peace once more. So congratulations to Akbar and his intended, and may they have many, many, many happy years together. We love you. We're teasing you, but we wish you nothing but the best.
Absolutely. Love ya.
Love you both.
So now that that's
out of the way, I want to hear about your day.
Oh, my God. Okay. So the kids are back in school. Now, the older one, you know, he goes to the high school up the street. So he's good. He can take care of himself in the morning. Little one, not so much. He's not, I take him to the bus stop. He's too young to go by himself.
Yep.
So the bus driver that we have had has just been
bloody fucking horrible. I mean, just crotchety old man showing up like 5 minutes before they're actually supposed to be at school. You know, so, you know, and then cussing in front of the kids, and not that I'm a good example, you know, but everybody knows, even if you slip every now and then in front of your own kids, you don't do it in front of other people's kids, especially
correct.
If you are professionally taking care of these kids.
Correct.
But I digress. So, after many complaints, we finally got rid of that bus driver. So I was making sure, you know, getting all the kids, you know, because some of them, you know, their parents have to go off to work, so I kind of watch them. I keep an eye on them. Getting all the kids on the bus, and I see a young woman who is driving, and so I approach as the kids are still getting on. I was like, please tell me you're the new bus driver. And she's like, yes, ma'am, I am. So I'm like having a 30-second conversation with this woman. And I hear, in the middle of it, as the kids are still getting on the bus, this honking and screaming from the stop sign, from where I was just standing. You know, and I kind of looked, and I missed part of what the bus driver said, so I'm going to, you know, re-engage her on Monday. So I turn around to walk away, and I'm like, thank you, you know. And this bitch is losing her fucking shit at the bus stop. In her SUV, you know, and she's like screaming at me, that can wait, I'm in a hurry, or that shit can wait, I'm in a hurry. Thankfully, the kids are all on the bus and, you know, they can't hear this. So I start walking back, coffee in hand, halfway done, and I'm like, I go, you know, and I looked at the other neighbors who were still standing there looking at her like she's fucking nuts. And I look over at her as I pass the car, and she's like, you know, that can wait, I'm in a fucking hurry. And I'm like, then you should have left sooner. You know, or there are multiple routes throughout the neighborhood you could have taken a different way. But, you know, your lack of planning, you know, does not constitute an emergency from me. And it was just like,
exactly.
And she's like, you should have left earlier. And I'm like, why? How does that even make sense? First of all, that's like the stupidest fucking retort that you could make. I should have left earlier? What?
Yeah, the bus driver got here when she got here. That makes no sense whatsoever. You're correct.
No. I was like, bitch, please. Yeah, but I just kind of like, I said, I started to try to explain myself like that would have done any good. I'm like, I've been standing here for 30 minutes. I was like, you know what? Just go. You're free now. Go. Bitch gets out of her car as I'm walking away. She's like, you know, stay to my face, bitch. Stay to my face. And I'm like, whoa. What the? And I'm like, it took me a moment to process it. Like, okay, this bitch is really coming at me over talking to a bus driver. Over kids getting on a bus. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is going to happen. You know, and I was getting ready to put my coffee down. I'm like, all right, I'm going to need this bitch's ass. And,
seriously, my sister's about to throw her hands. You better step back.
Yeah, and it's like, I may be a tiny little white girl, but I will tear your shit up. You know, I'm half Italian. You didn't know. And then Scott, I'll headbutt you.
No shit.
My neighbor saw that I was getting ready to put my coffee down. Like, because I looked at him like, oh, no, she didn't. You know,
really?
And I was starting to beat down, and I was going to fist my keys.
Yeah.
You know, like stick the keys in between my fingers. Like, all right, let's go. And he's like, hey, didn't you say you were in a hurry? Why don't you go? You know, and she still, you know, she, like, did her little flounce and turned around and still yelling and screaming. It's like, oh, my God, what the fuck ever.
Oh,
whatever.
Wow.
You know,
yeah,
and telling me to
feisty.
Shut up when I'm not seeing anything.
Seriously.
So, yeah, it was
an
exciting morning.
Wow. I wasn't there. And I will tell people. My kid's sister, as she said, she may be a little white girl, But watch out. Once those hands start going, your shit's over. It's over. She will mess somebody up for real.
It's like, especially if I'm trying to, like, walk away. I didn't say anything nasty to her. It was just, you should have left sooner. And I didn't even say it sarcastically. I didn't say it with a look. I was just like, then you should have left sooner. Like, common sense. Hello.
Yeah.
But this bitch was crazy. She was fucking crazy.
And it's like, all right, okay, we're going to do this.
I wasn't there to hold your coffee, your hair, your shoes, your earrings, nothing. See,
yeah,
she takes on the world even when I'm not there. See that? you are tough. You are very tough. I wouldn't fuck with you. Hello? And I'm on the right side of shit. I wouldn't fuck with it. No. Mm-mm. That's my baby girl.
But, you know, I'm telling you, though, that's another thing. Because, you know, I haven't been on, you know, the computer that much today, but it's like I was looking at Facebook and almost every other post people were having shitty days. So I don't know what is going on in the atmosphere, but it's another one of them days.
Yeah.
You know,
everybody's
having a hard time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No. Yes, we are sorry for your stress. Please don't bring it to us. If you want to talk about and commiserate about your shitty day, we're more than happy to listen. But if you're going to bring your shittiness to us, that's going to be a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Then we're going to have a talk.
I don't want to have to throw my hands. Yeah, I don't want to have to throw my hands, because if I have to throw my hands, the shit's over. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie. That's right. Oh, she listens good. You see that? did you bring your cards a little bit?
I sure did. I actually almost forgot them, and I was like, nope, my sister's going to ask me. I better go get them. So how many you want?
You smart. I don't know. I haven't. I gotta get mine out of the case here. Hang on. See, my turn to say hang on.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Now who's telling me to hang on?
Well, all right. Don't hang on. Just keep talking. How's that? So anyway, yeah, it's been an interesting day. As we know, I'm still very much medicated, and nothing seems to be happening physically. They don't know what it is. They can't find a cure. I don't think they know which end is up. One doctor says it's this thing. Another doctor says it's something completely different. It's like, can you people get on the same page? Now, I will share something that I got in my reading from Jade Sol Luna. Jade Sol Luna, who once a month is a member of our show, and we are happy to have him, made an interesting comment to me that doctors would find me a mystery. This is before he ever knew that I had been ill. And he said that I have to go with Chinese medicine, so I'm going to need to find myself a Chinese practice and see if they can figure out what to do with me. He says a lot of what's wrong with me is energy and psychically related. So I'm still trying to clear and ground out all of that. But it's interesting. Jade Sol Luna, Asterian astrologer, check it out. We have previous shows with him. He has his own Facebook page. The AsterianAstrology.com is his website. Just giving a little cheap plug right there. Okay, I'm getting ready to throw five. You ready?
All right, let me shuffle real quick. I thought you were still getting them out of the case. I was waiting on you.
No, I was. I took them out. I started talking. You know, my mouth goes. That's it. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, see, I'm not that
blah,
talented.
Raina can talk and chew gum at the same time.
Yay! All right. Let me spread these out. I said spread.
Spread it.
And I'm going to pick.
Spread it.
Spread them.
All right. Wow.
I'm looking at the cards I pulled, and all I can tell you is wow.
And here I am still pulling. All right, let me move these out.
Oh, I pulled seven. Sorry, had to.
You pulled
it was
seven?
A necessity.
All right.
I pulled. It was. I had to. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'll pull more.
Yeah. Wow.
Ooh. A lot of hot loving going on.
Uh-oh. I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have to tell you that this reading is divided up into three parts.
Okay.
Do you want me to start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Wow.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So the first card is success in all things. All things. All of them.
Ooh.
Everything. All of it. The second card was success in business. The card underneath that is instability. Things are rocking. Gamble pays off.
Nice.
Okay, that's for you and me, by the way. I recognize that immediately.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, the next set of this is a single card, and it says loss of property if not careful. So in essence, what I'm getting is, somebody's about to lose a car or a job. So be very careful. If you're screwing up at work, stop doing that. If you're involved in gossip, if you're involved in gossip at work, stop doing that. Because the people that talk about other people are the people that wind up getting fired. Not the guilty party, necessarily, but you. So shut the fuck up. And just observe, because sometimes observing is a lot more fun and a hell of a lot safer than being involved. So shut your fucking mouth. Do what I tell you. Third set. Everything is stable. Don't rock the boat. Coupled with, now this is what I find interesting, reunion with a forgotten love. So that's interesting. And then underneath that is jealousy may develop. Now, I don't know who that is. I don't know what that situation is. But you got a lot of shit going on at once right there. Everything's stable. And then you're going to hook back up with somebody that you haven't thought about in years. And then some jealousy shit is going to start. So this is not a married person. I can tell you that right up front. You're in a stable situation. You have a relationship, but this other relationship is going to come to call. And if you start fucking with person B, person C is going to get jealous. Wait a minute, that's backwards. If you're person A, your partner is person B, this other person is person C. Okay. So if A fucks around with B, C is going to get jealous. But C doesn't have anything to stand on because you're not married. So I know you're justifying to yourself, well, we're not married, I can do what I want. Sort of, kind of, but not really. If you're going to have a relationship with person B, and I'm talking to person A now, you need to really think about what you're going to do with the situation with person C. So just, if you really want to make a change, go with person C. Johnny Depp said something phenomenally brilliant. He said, if you love someone and you fall in love with someone else, go with the someone else, because it proves you didn't love the first person to begin with. And I have to tell you, I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
If you were really in love with number one, number two wouldn't have had a chance. So you're probably best off going with number two. And you know, and a lot of people are like, yeah, but there's history with number one and all of this. And yes, that's true. But unfortunately, even though we like to think we're creatures of habit, we are in certain things, but in our relationships, we get bored. We get very bored. And the last thing I think we're supposed to do is stay in a situation where we feel like we have to be there as opposed to we want to be there. I see people make this mistake. I have made this mistake in the past. You know, there were kids involved. I felt like I had to make a relationship work, even though there was abuse and all kinds of other shit. And it's not that you necessarily have an abusive situation. Sometimes it's just a situation where you grow apart. If you grow apart, you need to recognize that and go ahead with it. Go ahead with your growth. That's your job as a human being on the face of the earth, and continue on. I had a conversation earlier today with someone, and you know, who, and we were talking about the concept of staying together for the sake of the children. And I said, you know, that ruins more kids than people really know. When you have two people who don't want to be together, or one of those people that doesn't want to be there, and you're saying that you're going to stay together for the sake of the kids, you are doing the kids no favor. You are giving them a bad example. And if, God forbid, there is abuse in the home, you're only making it 10 times worse. You are setting these children up for failed relationships. Give yourself and your children the opportunity to see what a healthy, normal relationship looks like. Okay, soapbox over. I'm done. You go.
I've got single cards. This is not an all-inclusive. So I'm going to start with the first one. Unlucky, caution needed. This is an accident-prone person. And this is, I feel like, a physical situation. Put the phone down while you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
Watch where you're going. As a matter of fact, you're too fucking attached to your phone. Put it down while you're walking or doing other activities. You know, that's all there is to it. Second card, new friends. This, I feel, is somebody who has been inside of their shell for so many years, they don't understand that people are trying to get to know you. It's okay to relax now. This is not high school anymore. So you know, it's like an ugly duckling situation. You know, you are an awesome person. Stop being, not that it's not necessarily in your nature. It's become habit to be introverted because you don't expect anybody to talk to you. You need to talk to people. Just start opening up. Your world will open up so much more. But, yeah, there are people trying to get to know you. And I feel like this is a female. Take chances. You know, risk looking stupid. Because if you don't live life, you know, what the hell are you doing? So, third card, unexpected love. This is not a human relationship. You are going to adopt a dog. I feel this is a male. You are going to adopt a dog, and this dog is just going to become your life. Not that you're overly obsessed, not that you're crazy dog man. You know, I guess, I don't know, I guess that would be the opposite of crazy cat lady. But
I
this
guess.
Dog is just, you've been through a rough time the past couple years, and this dog is just what you need, and he's going to show up on your doorstep. And it's a mutt, you know, scraggly, you know, medium-sized dog, but this dog is going to become your best friend. So,
You know who you just described, right?
No, who?
Our brother.
Oh, no, he doesn't need any more animals.
No, he does not. I'm just saying.
Back.
Put it down. Put the puppy down.
Put
anyway.
The dog down.
I thought that was funny.
That is funny. You're funny. All right. Number four, good financial news. Somebody is going to be getting a little bit extra in their check that they weren't expecting, a bonus that they had actually forgotten about. So go buy yourself some bling bling or something real pretty. You know, you can afford it at this point.
Yeah.
Or actually something that you've been wanting for a while but figured, okay, you know what? Not yet. You keep putting it off. Just buy it, because that's part of magic too, is
mm-hmm.
sometimes when you go ahead and you're able to get something that you've been wanting but you've been putting it off because you've been worried about money, it relieves
mm-hmm.
that worry about money.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually perpetuates more finances coming in toward you. So, let's see. Number five, opportunity for passionate romance. Hello. And this is exactly what it sounds like. Yes. So, just be careful. As always, you don't want to wind up with a tryst and then a kid. So just be cautious. Don't get too swept away, but go ahead, baby. Go on with your bad self. Number six is a chance to make money. I almost feel like a flea market. It's going to start out really small, just selling a couple things that you want to get rid of, sort of like a yard sale, but you don't want to sell it for like 5 cents. Take it to a flea market. And I have a funny feeling it will lead to something else, something bigger. You will acquire more stuff. You are going to be like a magnet for tchotchkes or however you say that. And it will kind of avalanche and build on itself. So, go for it. And number seven is flirtation. This... Now, this, I feel, is a married person, and not the same person you were talking about in your reading.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to flirt. You know, don't be overt about it, but, like, you know, a little flirtation here and there, you know, kind of keeps your ego up, and we all need that because we have a tendency to deflate ourselves unless, you know, you're one of those people that just thinks too much of themselves. but yeah, and those people don't need any help.
For real.
But yeah, don't be afraid to flirt. You know, a little, you know, I mean, flirt with men, women, whoever. You know, flirt with friends. Flirt
both.
With your grandma. Practice.
Flirt with both. Yeah, practice on people. Get out there and do some stuff. Absolutely.
There you go. Ah, and with that being said, our guest is actually in the queue.
Yes!
So you ready to bring him on? Yay!
Please bring him on.
All right. David, how are you?
Hey, y'all. I'm good.
Hey,
how are you?
Oh,
we're doing
good.
Here.
Can you hear me okay? I'm on this headset thingy.
I can hear you
absolutely.
Fine.
Wonderful.
Loud.
You never know with these things.
Yeah.
For real. Have you ever heard our show? You know.
And sometimes it's not good when I try to tempt the technology gods by using new gadgets.
It's a new gadget you're using?
Yeah, one of those hands-free things.
Cool.
So
I can
multitask.
Need one of those.
Yes.
I need one of those.
I probably shouldn't multitask in it any more than I do already. I am one of those people who walks with their phone. I probably shouldn't do it as much as I do, though.
maybe that was you that I was... Okay, then it's a good thing you got the headset. Yeah, it's a good thing you got the headset, because, no, you need to watch where you're going, baby.
Yeah. Especially where I live, Washington, D.C., you could get hit by the president's motorcade if you're not careful.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, that is true.
And they will run your ass down.
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
I have I've worked on many campaigns, and yes, I've not only been almost hit by a motorcade, but I have driven in a motorcade. So yeah, I get you.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Lots of fun. So, David, this is the wonderful, by the way, this is the wonderful David Salisbury, author, PETA activist, just general amazing activist, and which I started reading your book, and I have to tell you, I said, and I'm talking about Deep in the Heart of Witchcraft. Did I say that right?
The Deep Heart of Witchcraft, yep.
The Deep Heart of Witchcraft, excuse me. So I started reading it, and I said to Sis, you know, he's so young. When he's written a book that seasoned veterans, like old folks, like me, old people write this book. I've got to know your history. I've got to know how you got into the craft. I've got to know what made you write this book at this particular time. I mean, you're amazingly prolific.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
That's true.
Well, let's see. I started in the craft, I had a kind of soft beginning into it when I was about 11. My stepmother at the time was practicing Wicca, and I was kind of, she would do it very kind of secretly and off in her room, and I would see her do it when I would go visit my father's house, she lived with. And I kind of took an interest to it, and she, you know, explained some things to me and said, you know, maybe when you're older, teach you a little bit. Well, she ended up falling out of it. And then a year later, when I went to middle school, I was in the seventh grade, and I met a girl whose mother was a high priestess. And then I was kind of waiting to be able to learn a little more at that time. You know, to 12 years old, the only information out there was, you know, at the bookstore and the big mall that, you know, you would have had to drive to, and internet, it was 99. So there were only those like kind of crappy little basic websites still.
Right.
So I started hanging out with this girl, and then she gave me some resources, you know, some books from her house before I ever met her mother. And then I started really just kind of studying on my own. And then eventually I met said mother of friends and her cousin. And then eventually, once my own mother got a little more used to the idea, she met the high priestess, said it was okay that I go to their family coven things and get a little more formal with the teachings. And it went from there, and I just totally fell in love with it. And I just, I was kind of a weird kid, as a lot of us witches were in our youth. So, you know, instead of going out to, parties on Saturday nights, I would be held up in my room just like devouring every single book that I could, you know, experimenting with, you know, different ritual praxis and all of that. So, yeah. And
that's awesome.
still in the heart of the Bible Belt, as you all understand.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
I didn't know you were actually not far from us.
Yeah, that was in Concord.
Yeah, so we're like, me personally, I'm like, I think 20 minutes from Concord. Yeah, I know. I wish I had known you while you were still living here. We could have totally hung out.
Well, I got out of Concord as soon as I graduated high school.
Oh.
I couldn't wait to get out. But I love going back and visiting my family. But yeah, I feel really lucky because, you know, even though it was the South, I really didn't have any trouble connecting with the paying community as a youngster. And getting older, I realized that a lot of adult pagans are really weary about teaching youth who aren't from a pagan family. And I didn't know that at all until I moved out of North Carolina, because the Charlotte Concord community had such a family-based community. And, you know, once they got the okay from my mom, it was like, oh, fine. After that, you know, I just started doing things with with groups for years after that. One of the most instrumental things, I think, in my kind of those early preaching years, you know, 12 and 13, was a group called Teen Wiccan Wisdom, and it was actually a support group for teen pagans that was held at a Starbucks in downtown Charlotte. And the adult coven of that coven I was talking about, they would sponsor it. So they would have the teens go and kind of talk to each other and share their stories, and then they would have a couple of adults there to kind of sit in the background and just, you know, partly chaperone and partly be a resource for questions, you know, if we had esoteric questions or things like that. And that was just a huge advantage to have that space.
Oh, that's
do you know
awesome.
What happened?
Yeah.
Do you know what happened with that group? Are they still in existence?
I don't think that it's in that incarnation now, but I know that the coven elders who ran those programs are still active in the area, and they do different things. I don't think Teen Wiccan Wisdom is still around anymore, mostly because I think actually the most of the teens who are in that group, I don't remember there being a lot of new members as I was getting older. So it was kind of like most of us grew up and then either, you know, started having kids of our own or moved out of town or, you know, started, you know, going to college and things like that and starting our own families.
And stopped being teens, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stopped being teens. Well, that's the hope. when you come through like that. Yeah, but I still to this day, you know, going to different parts of the country and talking to different pagan communities, I still hardly ever see things like that. So I just think it's really cool that I got to have that experience, and I'm super grateful for it.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So
yeah,
there's a little Charlotte love for you.
There you go.
Aw.
Yeah, because when I was first getting into it, I mean, I was like you. I'm, you know, the weird kid. I was always reading Omni magazines, watching In Search Of instead of, you know, like the Barbies and stuff. I hated Barbie. But, you know, I'm still not a fan, but, you know, it's like I always felt connected to paganism in some way. I knew there was something else out there, and my parents were Roman Catholic, but they were luckily very open-minded. But they were still kind of, I don't know about that. You know, that's like, that's devil worship. And it's like, okay, you know what? I feel connected to this. You know, I went to Walden Books. My first was like, I think, Sarah Lydon Morrison, which is probably not the best source for a teenager, but you know, at 16, I was like, you know, practicing candle magic and all that stuff, but I don't know where I was going with that. But, oh, no, I wanted to have the information before I came to them, you know, and came out of the broom closet, like, you know, okay, I know you said that I can choose my religion when I'm old enough, and this is what I've chosen, you know, and my mom was so leery of it, but when I explained it to her, she's like, oh, okay. And she will actually be one of the first people to defend me if somebody says boo, you know, along with all the other stuff. It's like, but yeah, I
same thing
that.
Here. My mom was so weary at first just because I, you know, not necessarily because she was closed-minded or anything. I mean, she was a Christian, but the thing with her was that she just didn't know at all. It was just, you know, like honest ignorance. Even when I told her about it, she was still like, well, I don't know. And, you know, maybe not so much in the house, but, you know, you can believe whatever you want, I guess. But what happened was the proof was in the pudding. You know, a year went on and then 2 years. And she started noticing that the more I integrated, you know, the spiritual parts of this, you know, the meditation and things like that, I started coming out of my shell a little more because I was a very extremely introverted kid. Started coming out of my shell, started concentrating in school better, making a few more friends a little bit, and she could really see that all of that was integrated into the spiritual work that I was doing. And, you know, I still had my own issues as a teen like anyone would, but my mom still tells people today when she kind of defends the craft to people, you know, when people find out that her son is a witch priest, she says, well, you know, say what you want about teens being into witchcraft, but I really credit it for my son not having an extremely crazy teenage time. You know, I never had to, like, pick him up from a party drunk off his ass. I never had to worry about drugs or, you know, unprotected sex, things about that. And, you know, not that I have any judgment or anything against that stuff, but stuff that you really shouldn't be doing when you're 14 and 15, who other people around me were doing. Yeah, other people around me were doing that stuff. And it was all connected to that whole, like, you know, I don't know that obviously my thoughts on things have evolved and changed as I've gotten older and understood, you know, wiser ways to act in the world. But, you know, at the time I had a very, like, clean body, clean mind, clean spirit, clean magic kind of view. So
yeah,
that kind of kept me in line a little bit.
That's
it's,
cool.
It's amazing because, you know, when people hear about someone younger being into Wicca or witchcraft, they immediately think, you know, devil worship or drinking or, you know, Bacchus rites and sex all over the place. And the truth really is exactly what you said about clean mind, clean body, clean spirit, clean magic. It makes perfect sense. And that is actually more of, or at least in my opinion, should be more of the truth as far as who we are and what we represent. You know, and speaking of things that look like they have a Christian bend to them, I love what you say about prayer in this book, because we've had, and my sister and I have had many conversations, because we do a daily devotional to the gods and goddesses every day. And, you know, when people hear, "Oh, you pray?" Yes, we pray. That's not a Christian thing. We were praying before there was Christianity. So I love that you bring that up in the book. I love that. It's something that people don't come to often until very late in the craft, that, yes, you prayer is what we do, and it's a good thing, and it should be embraced and not be afraid of the word.
Yeah, I mean, prayer, it's so important to me personally, just because, you know, first starting out and at such a young age and not having a lot of materials and resources and all of that, prayer was oftentimes the most magic that I could do. I mean, you know, at that age, I couldn't be burning candles. I couldn't, you know, go out and get all the herbs and things like that and the materials. And I'll never forget what my first priestess told me when I lamented that to her, you know, starting to get more books and look at the tools and things like that and be like, oh, I don't have an anathema and I don't have, you know, European mandrake root and things. She said,
right.
honey, tools are the icing on that cake.
That's right.
And it's so simple, but it's so true. You know, and tools are fun, and I love tools and all of that. But, you know, prayer, cultivating the ability to talk to the gods and the center and all of that, it just, I don't care how advanced anyone gets, you're always going to go back to those tools.
Yeah, I agree. But I like that she said that it's just the icing on that cake. It is really all just window dressing. But and I do admit that sometimes I fall prey, because we all know how much Raina loves to shop. I do. I love to shop, honey. I love pretty little shiny things. Ooh, shiny. That's one of my favorite things is ooh, shinies. And I do like to have, you know, oh, I need a fresh set of candles. So Dorian will make sure I have plenty of candles to burn and, you know, whatever little statues I need this week. You know, my sister makes sure I have all that stuff. And it is really just a focal point, because the magic doesn't come from the things. The magic comes from you.
Yeah.
And your connection to the gods. So I just really love that you touched on that. And I never, and I have to tell you, I never see that in books of this, in books of this kind. So I was thrilled to death to see that, you know.
Well,
and
for,
I, and
for
I
full disclosure, for full disclosure, I will tell you, when I got my first teen job delivering some pizzas, let me tell you, I went on a shopping spree with the magic tools. I need five of these and one of these, and I need the shiny cloak, and maybe I need two cloaks. So, yeah.
Ooh, I love them shiny. Yeah, oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, we have to...
Yeah, she gets distracted by shiny stuff. I get distracted by animals.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was... I think the utmost for me was acquiring a black cat. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And he wound up, he was not my familiar. He wound up, I was like a couple weeks pregnant when I just got the urge, I have to have a black cat. I have to have a black cat, and I have to have it now. I didn't realize I was pregnant, and he wound up being my son's cat.
Oh,
yeah, because
wow.
After a while, he was like, yeah, whatever, woman, just put food in my bowl, I'm good.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, how interesting. So it's like, you know, the child's spirit was maybe calling for its familiar or something. Hmm.
Yeah. And I hate to compare an animal to a tool, but for a lot of us, yeah, it's kind of like a catalyst. You know, that's what I look at tools as, is a catalyst. It's you've got the dress rehearsal, then you're more apt to remember your lines, so to speak.
Right.
I don't know. I digress. Yeah. I'm sorry. I have a tendency to go off on tangents.
No, it makes total sense. And the thing about tools that I find so interesting is when you look at, forms of traditional European witchcraft, like the cunning folk, you know, mm-hmm. they had tools, but, you know, the athame was the kitchen knife, you know, it was the broom that you also swept dirt with, you know. So they say, oh, your besom shouldn't be, you know, used to actually sweep dirt. Well, what do you think the real witches used their besom for?
Exactly.
You know, the cauldron was the pot that you had on your stove that you also cooked soup with. So, you know, just these everyday things. So I think sometimes we make things too complicated and think it's by necessity, when, you know, sometimes it's just for fun. And I don't knock the fun of it.
Well, I definitely like the fun of it. And I like the connection to the old ways by having the broom and, you know, a little cauldron, obviously not big enough to cook soup in, but it serves its purpose as a censure for my sage. You know, I still burn a ton of sage and I light incense every day, three times a day, and you know, I'm guilty of being caught up in some of the trappings. I can't help it. It's become part of my ritual, you know. And it's another thing I love about what you write about in this book, that honestly, I'm almost 52 years old, and I just last year started keeping a magical journal. And you mentioned that in the book, and you talk about the importance of having that. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's amazing that I just started doing this. Thank you. Thank you for confirming that.
It's never too late.
Seriously, if I could start at this age. But see, what fascinates me about you and this book is that you've written this book, I don't mean to harp on the fact that you're a younger person, but you're really young to write this sagely book, so I'm blown away by it.
Well, they say that you should write the book that you wish you could read, and that's kind of what I did, because you asked earlier how it kind of came about, and how it came about was that when I started getting into teaching positions with my coven, which I was weary about doing at first years ago, and, you know, kind of jumped into it, I noticed that in a lot of craft teachings, you know, you get your 101, you learn your ritual, all your tools, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through whatever, you know, general training course it is, and I'm speaking very generally here. After that, it seems like what comes next, you know, what's called advanced witchcraft, is really jumping into very specific specialties, you know. So, okay, you got your basics down. Now, maybe herbalism calls to you, or, you know, trance work, things like that. And it's something that you learn only about these one or two things for a really long time. And that kind of has, you know, an ancient tradition to it. You know, you have the shamans in a lot of cultures who are specialists with certain things that they were good at. But I noticed that there was this really big gap between the 101 and the extremely in-depth stuff that you kind of have to dedicate years to learn all at once, right up front.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I noticed in my experience was that after the 101, most people don't really know what they want to study years after that. And some people never find something that calls to them so much where they want to only focus on that one thing for years. It's like asking a freshman in high school, you know, pick your college major right now. and some high schools do that. That changes hundreds of times, and even when you get to college, you change your major, you know, definitely first semester. A lot of college kids, sophomore year even, they're still changing it. So it didn't really make sense to me that there was this huge gap. So, so Deep Part of Witchcraft was more meant to be a bridge. And I originally wanted to call it A Deep Part of Witchcraft, because I know calling it the Deep Part of Witchcraft sounds a tad bit pretentious, but the meaning of the title is that it's supposed to help you find your deep part of your craft. You know, not mine, not anyone else's, but yours.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's a wonderful book. You know, when I was a young witch many, many, many years ago, everyone that I was around said, you've got to have the big blue book, you know, the big Buckland complete book of witchcraft. And it's a wonderful book, and I highly recommend it to everyone. But this, your book, is such a gentle approach to the craft. I hope I'm saying this correctly. It's not a, you know, it's not a specific spell book. It's not an in-your-face, you need to do it this, and this. It's a very gentle introduction, and it's a learning experience, but it doesn't clobber you over the head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I was always taught that, you know, you can be trained in a specific tradition where, you know, it's really important to learn specific practices. And, you know, I give tools and exercises in there. But ultimately, I think a huge part of witchcraft that I think some in our community are moving away from a little bit is the idea that it really has to be so based on personal gnosis. You know, what are the spirits telling you directly? What are the gods
mm-hmm.
telling you directly? You know, not what the author is telling you. If you're really, really getting a great book, you know, the author should be kind of, you know, maybe the author is your facilitator to introducing you to that spirit or that god or whatever it is. But ultimately,
mm-hmm.
If you don't do the work to build the relationship yourself, then, you know, it's not really going to have a firm foundation, and it's not really going to bear fruit as well. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's like when you're first starting out, I'll use myself as an example. You know, it was like, okay, I'm going to say these words, and this is going to happen. You know, you don't, if you don't connect to it, if you don't really understand that, you know, you have to put the emotion and the connection behind it, it's useless. It's just words.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'd say that's one of the little perks, I think, to starting out as a teen, is that you really never lack emotion.
that's true.
Or drama. Yeah. So a lot of times a little too much emotion, a little too much drama in that magic, and you have to learn to tone it down a little bit. But yeah, so sometimes, you know, the magic can be too stuffy. It can be too process-based rather than, you know, getting to the meat of what you're doing. And I never really understood why people had a hard time with that, you know, emotional connection that you're talking about until I became a grown-up. And then I realized, oh, my feelings are, you know, maybe not as apparent and expressive as they were when I were a teen, but they sure as hell are a lot more complicated. And there's a lot of them that I really would rather just, you know, bury down and not deal with for another 10 years until my therapist makes me. So, yeah, you know, your connection with emotion and your feelings and how you express all that, I mean, it changes as you get older, and it's supposed to, but, you know, some keep their style of magic the same for their whole life, and I think you can really do that because, you know, you have to change with your magic because it's changing, and, you know, if your train has left the station and you still have your magic on the platform, then what do you got?
Yeah, exactly. You're traveling by yourself.
Yeah.
But I also like, you know, the fact that you talk about the commitment involved and the, you know, the being willing to actually do the work and start and to start off slowly, and you don't have to do it. It's not like an all-day every, you know, it's not an all-day thing, but take a few minutes a day.
Yeah.
To get familiar with what you're feeling and what you're hearing, and to actually, you know, and this is such a great book for somebody new to the craft who's interested but doesn't know quite how to start or how they should approach it. Because, you know, everyone has their own methodology for casting spells, prayer, cleansing, all these different things. And everyone's like, but show me how to do it. Tell me what to do. What words do I need to say? And it what I like about your approach is that you want the person reading it to be comfortable. You know, like when you talk about dedicating your wand, and it's like, you know, and do it until you feel like you're done. It's not by somebody else's guideline. It's so wonderfully put together in such a relaxed form. I mean, yes, there's structure, and yes, there are exercises, but they're, again, they don't browbeat you. I just love the way you wrote this.
I'm so happy that you said that, because some of the flack that I got from that book was actually specifically relating to the daily practice and the commitment stuff. You know, David, here you are telling people that to be effective magic workers, they have to, you know, commit to doing something every day. And until I heard that, it never occurred to me that anyone would have trouble with that, you know.
Right.
Maybe it's this cultural idea that if you do something every day, it's this huge obsessive part of your life, because, you know, Americans work too damn much. You know, we're at work like 8-9 hours a day, a lot of us, and that's a huge part. You know, kids take so much time, all of that. You know, when I talk about commitment and daily practice, you know, sure, you could have those days where you just want to sit at your altar for an hour or two. But most of the time, you might only be able to get 5 or 10 minutes in. And that 5 or 10 minutes, you might have to do while you're in the shower washing your hair. You know, you do whatever works. You know, especially, you know, as a mom. As a kid,
oh,
yeah. Imagine.
Well, yeah.
So.
Yay, school.
Yeah.
Right.
But I like the fact that, you know, because it's very much about, in order to have a relationship with anyone, you have to keep a level of communication going. So certainly you would do that with your chosen deities. So I don't see why that would be anything less than expected, certainly not a hardship if you're trying to grow yourself spiritually.
Yeah. And even for even for folks who practice non-religious forms of witchcraft, I like to say that the witchcraft I practice is a religious form of it, because I also am Wiccan and a witch. But even if you're a witch and not necessarily religious at all, you know, there's still spirits involved in your work, whether it's the spirits of the land or you're utilizing ancestral energies. Those are still beings, you know, they're not just random disparate energies. So, you know, even the, you know, you would call them the traditional witches today, they still form relationships with beings. They might not necessarily call it a god or a goddess, but, you know, it's their familiar spirit, or it's their, the egregore of their land, something like that. And it might not be that they're, you know, bowing down to that being and, you know, making all of these highly devotional and religious offerings. But, you know, if you look at those old woodcuts of witches, you know, selling their souls to the devil and all of that nonsense, there's often this interesting theme from all over Europe in different areas of the witch allowing the imp spirit to suckle them. And it's kind of a funny image. And, of course, you know, it's something that was certainly invented by the church to scare people. But there's this really interesting theme of feeding the imp spirit in a lot of these areas. And it's this idea that you're giving some of your life force energy to that spirit in the process of creating a pact to form that relationship so that the spirit can then go out and do something for you. You know, you got to give a little bit of yourself to that spirit. And, you know, we can, even if, you know, some of the way that came about was kind of nonsense, we can still translate it to the modern day and say, well, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you know, summon some kind of spirit in your circle and let it, you know, suckle on your booby for a while. But you're giving, you're off. Well, you can if you want to, whatever floats your boat. But, you know, the important thing is giving your time.
You said boob, I turned into a 12-year-old.
I mean, the ironic thing about all of it is that, you know, when people think about offerings and sacrifices as a form of building relationship with beings, the value of giving time by showing up in this day and in this culture just can't be understated, because what are we all, you know, in need of? It's more time. So by giving these spirits, these gods, these energies, a little bit of our time and attention, we're actually making a really meaningful sacrifice, because there's a million other things we could be doing.
I've never thought of it that way. That's so interesting that you say that, because I feel like I feel like I'm not doing enough, because time, a lot of the time, is all I can give. Do you know what I mean? It's
right,
because I'm, you know, people are still struggling, and you know, money doesn't come as easily as it used to a lot of the time. And there are those days where it's like, I wonder if I'm doing enough, because, as I said, time is all I'm able to give. So I'm glad you said that. That makes me feel better. Thank you.
Well, good. Yeah, it's a friend of mine is a Hellenic polytheist. You know, she practices ancient Greek religion. And something she told me about her practice and ancient Greek practice in this sense really struck me. And it's that, you know, the ancient Greeks, their religious practice was very home-based. So they didn't really go to temples a lot, you know, in ancient Athens, like we might think. Most of their practice was, you know, they had to leave their house, their safe dwelling place. They made a quick little offering to the gods before they left, you know, throw some barley down on the household altar, and then they would run out the door. Or, you know, they were going outside into their garden and, you know, they're having a glass of wine. They pour a little down onto the ground for the gods too. It was simple back then in a lot of cases. So, you know, sometimes we think of the ancient pagans as always having these huge, lofty, kingdom-wide festivals with burning bonfires, and, you know, we have the food, the huge feast table of food, and we're giving it all to the gods. No, not so much. The ancient people weren't really that different than we are.
Well, that's good. I feel, like I said, I feel better now. Thank you.
Good. Yeah.
No, and that's cool. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just recapping to say that, I still, you know, saying all this about giving the time that you can, the time that you can give is important. So, you know, if for someone who actually does have a good amount of time to spare, then, go ahead and sit down at your altar, do your stuff, whatever it is, your meditation, your energy work, for the amount of time you can. You know, so in the same sense, it's like, you know, I don't really believe in shortchanging the spirits that I work with by, you know, if I have a whole day free and I'm just hanging around at my house, I'm going to give them a little more attention on those days.
Yeah. That's basically what I do.
Yeah.
Well, if you mm-hmm. do it every day, you know, it becomes integrated in your life. You know, I think you can tap mm-hmm. into it quicker. You know, it
right.
Like you said, if you do even just a little bit every day, it's sort of like, you know, practicing for the Olympics or you know, practicing riding a bike. You know, eventually it just comes naturally.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's
it takes
important.
30 days to form any new habit. So, you know, do your practice a little bit every day for a month. And a lot of people, it only takes, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I think, you know, to get any kind of stable daily practice down and then to want to actually show up, which is funny because in a lot of big analogy that I use in as a teaching tool is talking about daily practice in relation to the gym. And, you know, not everyone goes to the gym, but, you know, if anyone out there does, they'll know that if you don't go to the gym for a really long time, the amount of time that you stay away is more unwillingness to not be there. And then when you actually get there, you're like, I hate this. And then you're there again the next day and then the next week and you still hate it. And then somewhere after those 3 weeks, you're like, okay, I don't really hate this that much. And I kind of like this. And then after that 30 days, after that month, you're like, I'm totally digging the gym now. I really want to go every day and it makes me feel good. I think the same thing is true for daily practice, you know. There's some days when I have to, oh, my God, I got to have a couple of cups of coffee in me before I get to the altar because I don't want to put the gods through my gruff ass early in the morning. get my coffee, have still to drag myself there. And there's some mornings where I just hop out of bed and I just, like, totally crave time at the altar. And, you know, so I always tell people be kind to yourself because you're going to have the days where you got to drag yourself over there and you're going to have the days when it's a little easier. And I really don't think that changes for anyone, no matter, you know, how long you've been doing this. Because we
That's
are human.
That's true. There are days where it's like, oh, I need to go do this. And I just, you know, I'm busy working, I'm busy doing this, I'm busy doing that, and I just really, I beat myself up over it when I don't do it, and thank you for making me, again, feel better about not always wanting to when I know I should, and I do every day, even if it's just for like 5 minutes, but sometimes finding that 5 minutes is really hard.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes 5 minutes is too much, and then you just give yourself 2 minutes instead. And I notice that sometimes in those really hard days where 5 is too much and I give myself 2, sometimes when I sit down for that 2, after that 2 minutes is up, I'm like, okay, maybe now I'll give it 5. And then it usually turns into a little longer. So it's like, you know, most of the work is just showing up and being there, and then when you're actually there, it feels a little easier, or at least that's how my experience is, but
yeah,
I know it's different for everyone.
Yeah. Like last night I was exhausted and I knew I had made a commitment and I knew I had to live up to it, and I fell asleep early and then I woke mm-hmm. up and did it. It was like, oh, I got to do this. I won't be able to go back to sleep until I do. So I did.
Yeah. Well, your body and your spirit just needed sleep at that time instead. You know, it's like folks who say that they chronically fall asleep during meditation, and that it's this huge problem for them, and they can't meditate because they fall asleep. But I like to say, well, you know, if you're forming the intention to meditate and you keep falling asleep, then you know maybe what your spirit is craving is sleep, and you just need to let that happen.
I do that every single time. I think there's been a few times that I've been able to stay awake because, you know, it's full daylight and, you know, as I put myself in a position where I won't be able to fall asleep, but 9 times out of 10, I'm snoozing.
Yeah.
But it's good. I wake up feeling refreshed and, you know, to myself.
Waking up from a sleep that was induced by meditation is like crazy refreshing. I still don't know why, but there's just something about forming the intention to meditate, sleeping, and then waking up from that sleep and you feel amazing.
Yeah.
So something's going on there. Again, the proof is in the pudding.
I know. Speaking of books, and I wanted to, because we've got about 19 minutes left, I wanted to touch on your new book. I know this has gone by so fast. We're going to have you back on because this has been an amazing chat. But your forthcoming book is a teen book, which I think is awesome because, you know, especially coming from somebody like you that has lived that and is not, you know, oh, teen love cells, how to make a girl jealous, how to do this, you know, the fluffy shit, you know?
Yeah.
People need some in-depth, so I'm really excited that you're doing this. I'm trying to find the name of it. I apologize, I'm so sorry.
Oh, it hasn't really been promoted hardly at all yet, so that might be why. But the title is Teen Spirit.
That's awesome, because I'm a 90s graduate, that, you know, the Nirvana, that was my time. So I like the name.
Yeah, I really, I was so excited when my publisher asked me to write Teen Spirit Wicca, and that was another exciting part of it, was that was the first time that I got approached to write something, so that was cool. But I was so excited to write it just because I, as far as I've seen, I really don't think that there are any books for teen pagans that were written by teens who found the craft already when they were really young and had to kind of bring themselves through it. It was mostly adults who discovered it in their adult life, and then either through having a teen of their own or thinking back on their own teen experiences and how they would apply to the craft back then if they knew it. I think that's what most of the books are, and a lot of them are really wonderful. Sons of the Goddess by Christopher Penzack is a really cool book for young pagan male youth. But Teen Spirit Wicca, it is a very basic 101 book. I thought about wanting to take it a little deeper, but, you know, page limits and all that. It's a 101, but I tried to make it different by weaving in really practical experiences about, okay, here's this thing that I'm teaching you now. Here's what I experienced when I was learning it, and some things that, you know, you might encounter that you might not expect. Here's something that really screwed me up, and I'm telling you about it, so maybe you won't make the same mistake. So it has
brilliant.
A lot of life experiences.
Yeah, I wish there was books like that when I was first starting out, you know, because, yeah, you can read what the author is writing and the formula and everything, but it's like, okay, you get self-conscious, like, am I doing this wrong? And you know that messes up your magic. Well, at least it does for me. You know, it kind of throws me off. And if you're concentrating on, oh, am I doing this the wrong way? Okay, am I standing in the right position? You know, are the gods going to get angry at me if I do it this way? Is the spell going to backfire?
Yeah.
And you've got these thoughts going on. So I think that's absolutely brilliant to do that.
Yeah, and another big aspect that I put in Teen Spirit Wicca that I thought was missing from a lot of books was the social aspect of things. So a lot of Teen Pagan books brush up on things like bullying and talking to parents and things like that, but I really just totally firmly believe that you really just can't understand truly what that is like to the fullest extent unless you really did go through it. And, you know, being very open about practicing witchcraft and training in it, 12 years old in a middle school in North Carolina, I got the full breadth of bullying and all of that.
And
also being a weird kid. And you know what? Sometimes the advice of ignore them and they'll go away it's just bullshit.
Yeah, I agree.
It doesn't work. Same thing with a lot of the advice about talking to parents. You know, and I mean no disrespect to others who have suggested this in the past, but talk to your parents. If they don't like it, wait till you're 18. That frustrates me to no end.
You really
cannot tell a 13-year-old who found something that they're so excited and passionate about that really helps them, and then tell them that they have to wait till they're 18. That's an entire lifetime to that kid. I actually do say, if your parents don't like it, here's how you can do it on the down low. You know, not so obvious. You know, I'm not going out there saying, you know, wave your athame at your parents' face and stick your tongue out at them and say you're going to do it anyways. But I'm like, here's how you can take your practice internally so that, you know, the parents aren't freaking out. You can still practice your craft, but a little more subtly until it's, you know, easier to do out in the open. And, you know, that's a little bit more of a controversial position, I'm sure, but I believe in it very strongly.
I'm telling you, and when does this come out? Because I have a 16-year-old that, you know, I'm kind of apprehensive about what to teach him and, you know, how far to go with it because he's got a temper. It's like his magic is a little bit volatile. You know, but I've felt it in him. So, yeah, I very much want to get my hands on this book for him.
Yeah, it should come out in early spring, I think. I don't actually have an official publication date yet because it's actually still in editing right now. So it's super new. Actually, the first time I think that I've talked about it in kind of a public space before. So, yay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yay.
Hot then.
Oh, no, it wasn't secret or anything. I mean, we got the Facebook page going up about it or anything. I haven't verbally talked about it in public yet, but I'm excited.
Oh, okay.
So, yay, thanks for giving me that space.
Yeah, we're excited about it, too, if you couldn't tell.
And we would love to have you back on when you release the book to come on and talk about it. And that would be awesome.
Oh, I would love that. That would be amazing. This is it's true. The time really goes by so fast. I listen to this show all the time, and it's almost like all of your guests are like that. You know, really? Is it, you know, time to wrap up already? And I totally am on that side of that now.
Well, we hope you enjoyed being with us because we sure loved having you, and we really do want you back on. I think that would be great because I've read so many books. As I've said before, I'm older, you know, I'm almost 52. If there's a book out there, I've probably read it. And this just really impressed me like you would not believe.
Oh, thank you so much. That is so nice to hear.
I know. And I know I haven't said much about it. I'm still going through it, but I am reading it. And thank you so much for sending it to us.
My pleasure.
Absolutely brilliant, and I like what you say about blood magic because that's me. I will sacrifice a little bit of blood, but it kind of gives a lot of people the heebie-jeebies, like, oh my God, it's a sacrifice. It's like, you know, a pinprick of blood, and I don't see a problem with that. But like with voodoo, you know, because I know a lot of people who practice voodoo, and you know, they will actually sacrifice animals, and that's why I'm not Voodooing. It's like, no, you know, they believe that sacrificing your own blood is bad. It's bad mojo.
Oh.
You know.
Yes, yeah, so the when I was originally taught about blood magic and sacrifice and things like that, the style of teaching that I was trained under, giving of your own blood is considered more powerful because you don't have anything to lose by harming a being that's not you. So,
exactly.
You know, sacrificing an animal in that sense is seen as kind of a cop-out, you know. So
yeah,
interesting.
I agree with that. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And you know, that's I'm not judging the, you know, the Afro-Caribbean traditions that have a history of doing that at all. And, you know, you can definitely argue that energy is being released by that process. But in terms of the feeling of actually giving something valuable away that you'd rather not give away, your own blood is really powerful. Because, you know, most of us, you know, if we're sacrificing the chicken, we're not going to, like, pluck it ourselves and go into the kitchen and cook it and eat it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Because I'm stuttering.
Oh, no,
here.
It's just
I'm
agreeing
like,
with you. Yeah. No, it's just agreeing with you.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, but, you know, I am biased because I am an animal rights activist, so just full disclosure there.
Yeah. I couldn't myself, you know, and no judgment for me, for anybody who does, but it would throw me off. I'd be like, no, I can't do it at the last minute, and it'd be like, just boom, backfire.
Yeah, and I know a voodoo practitioner who does do animal sacrifice on occasion, and he once told me, you know, if you're either squeamish or you don't think it's right, then absolutely don't do it, because what happens then is I believe the tradition he practices under, they believe that sacrifice is then tainted because you've expressed your unwillingness to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm sorry I can't remember the style or tradition that comes from, but I thought that was really interesting.
It makes sense, though.
Yeah, you're like begrudgingly giving that spirit something that you don't even, you know, want to do in the first place. So
it puts a bad light on it, you know, or bad energy, so to speak, because you're putting that
it's
in
like
there.
Like giving your friend a gift and being like, here's this thing that I absolutely was miserable doing, and it just disgusts me and freaks me out. Here, happy birthday.
Enjoy.
Oh my god. And if I could just say, that reminds me of like the first time someone wanted to have anal sex with me. I'm sorry. I just had to say that. It's like, I'll do this for your birthday, but that's it. That's all you're getting. And I really didn't want to do it in the first place. I'm just saying, sorry, I had to go there. Thank you.
Yeah. Who wants it if they're just going to be miserable? Where's the fun in that?
There is no fun for me, apparently. So I'm just saying.
Right.
If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Because the gods won't respect it if you give somebody a gift begrudgingly. No, you're not going to get the desired reaction from it. So, I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Or like just in life, if you are a yes person, which I used to be, my sister has slowly but surely been beating it out of me. You know, I would say yes when I really didn't want to do it. And it was nothing against the other person. It was just, I really don't feel like it. I really am not going to enjoy this. I'm going to be miserable. And it builds up resentment. And I would wind up, after so many times of doing this, I would make myself sick.
Yep.
You know?
Wow.
And yeah, it's like it builds up that resentment and that bad, yucky feeling. Like, ugh, I have to do this, but I'm not happy about it. And then you wind up snapping at other people for no reason, you know. And it's like, why am I doing this? You know, when you live your life the way you want to, you know, when you free yourself of that and you're honest with yourself, you know, within life and within magic, I think everything just goes so much more smoothly.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you do something unwillingly, you know, I think you can do something willfully and struggle with it or be uneasy about doing it, and that's fine, but doing things that you're unwilling to do, it's really bad if you're a magical practitioner because you're cheating yourself out of power. You know, you're losing power, you're losing life force energy, and we need that. I mean, I make no secret about the fact that I want to be a fully autonomous, powerful human being. You know, I think that that's that's one of my personal goals, doing magical work. I want to, you know, live a life of power. So I'm not going to do things I don't want to do just to make someone happy.
There you go. And that's the thing that a lot of people have a hard time getting past is, oh, this person's going to be mad at me. It doesn't matter. So what if they're mad at you? They'll get over it if they're really your friend. And if they don't, they won't. So what have you got to lose? A moocher. Oh, well. Boo-hoo.
Yeah, I feel you there, too, because I'm definitely a people pleaser in that respect. And it took a really long time to kind of notice that connection between, you know, giving away power and saying yes to things that you don't want to. And it's hard to get used to, you know. It's this process of claiming sovereignty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at it as the High Priestess card in the tarot. It's, you know, she's sovereign. She's on her throne. She looks a little stern. But, you know, she's standing in her full power. To some people, she might look like a wise and beautiful magical being, and to some people, she might look like kind of a bitch. But who cares? Because she's got the power.
Thank you.
There you go. There you go.
That's what I'm saying.
And you're right. It does. It takes away your power. You're giving your power over to other people. Yeah.
Yes.
But I digress. We've only got a few minutes here, so we are going to absolutely thank you the utmost. We have very much enjoyed having you on and can't wait till you come back on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for the book. I'm sorry. I know I'm on a delay. I don't mean to keep interrupting. I apologize about that.
Oh, no, it's fine. It might be my headset because I was hearing myself talk to you. No, just let me know what you think about it. And, you know, if there's something about it that you don't agree with, please tell me, because I actually really enjoy it when someone disagrees with me about things because it's an opportunity to learn.
That's a good way of looking at it. Actually, I was going to ask you if you wouldn't mind. I would love to do a review.
Oh, feel free. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Yep. What you like, what you didn't like. Yep.
Well, so far I'm liking everything. I really am.
Yeah, me too.
It's an awesome book.
Well, I'll take
that. You guys should go out and get it.
Great.
And we have all your links on our blog. So I'm going to post that again. And go grab the books. And I can't wait till the next one comes out. I'm absolutely grabbing that. But I've got 90 seconds left, so we are going to bid you good night and thank you again.
Yeah,
thank you again. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Please come back on soon when you've got your next book out. We definitely want to talk more about that too.
Yes.
Yay. Well, thank you for the space to talk, and I hope y'all just have a wonderful night.
You too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Night night.
All right. Bye bye.
Good night, David. He's awesome. What can I tell you? He's awesome.
He is so sweet. We've got 60 seconds left, so I am going to let you go. We are going to end the show. Like, you see, now I'm talking like, well, we're just on the phone chatting, you know, but
like,
that's how we start
like we do.
The show. So. Exactly.
Right.
So go have a fun weekend. Akbar, I hope your wedding goes smoothly. I hope there's no rain tomorrow. I hope it's nice and cool and you have a beautiful ceremony. We love you.
We love you.
And we will see y'all next weekend. You want to give a shout out?
I just want to wish Akbar and his intended the best and a happy life. And I want to say goodnight to everybody. God's protect you. And blessed be to all.
Night.
Night.